Welcome to Delightfully Dysfunctional, a podcast about navigating the emotions of the human condition and the challenges that come with it. I'm Kaylani Persian Mason, a psychotherapist and life coach with James Timmons and Ever Curious Human. This is not a replacement for mental health therapy. Please seek out mental health care if that's what you're needing. This is an opportunity for self-healers to dive deep and understand more about themselves.
So I was talking about maybe getting my PhD, and this was another realization I had. If I got my PhD in sex therapy and was a sex therapist, well, I might need to go back to my maiden name, which is Coochie. And I could be Dr. Coochie. I haven't told you this tidbit. I know.
Your maiden name was Coochie?
Yeah. Well, so I think that there was a better way to pronounce it, but we're so like Americanized. That's how my dad pronounces it, but it's spelled K-O-U-C-H-I. So I think it's supposed to be like Koche. I lived in the Midwest. No one can pronounce complicated things.
So your name was Kaylani Coochie?
I was Kaylani Coochie. Yes.
That's hilarious.
I mean, it was another reason why I felt very different.
Did they ever make fun of that or anything?
Oh, frick yes. Oh, my gosh. Yes. There was so... Yes. I just had to, like, embrace it eventually.
No, I 100% agree. If you become a sex therapist,
yes,
you should be Kaylani Coochie.
Dr. Coochie. And then that does all the marketing for me. People
I know.
Would be like, she must know things.
Dirty talk with Dr. Coochie. Oh,
I already call her Dr. Coochie.
Oh, no. No.
Oh, man. And she calls you Dr. Ooh Daddy. That's hilarious.
Oh my gosh.
Did you get that? Is that recorded?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Oh gosh. Okay. Zach leaned in. I already call her Dr. Coochie.
Oh my gosh. Like making me cry.
That's hilarious.
Wait,
so
also
cringy.
James, really quick, can you move like just like a foot to your left? Okay, perfect. Okay. Thank you. Sorry.
It's okay. You see those hips? That hip movement?
La 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 la. Hips don't lie.
So.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to Dirty Talk with Dr. Coochie.
Oh, gosh. It's just getting worse. It's just devolving.
No, I feel like that is gold.
No one hacked into my bank accounts. I don't think this is the password for anything anymore. But my mom's maiden name, Krusenstein. So I just have weird last names.
Krusenstein.
Coochie Krusenstein. Those were the options.
Krusenstein's actually cool sounding.
It's there's like, a Krusenstein castle in Austria, too.
Okay.
So basically, I'm like a princess.
Krusenstein. Krusenstein?
Just kidding. I'm not.
Is that Tom Cruise? Oh, how's it spelled?
K-R-E-U-Z-E-N-S-T-E-I-N.
Okay. Exactly what I thought.
Yes.
Cool.
And then my grandpa, I'm just going to tell you random things about my family, but they're funny and or interesting. So my grandpa was a theology major. Maybe that's why I'm such a thinker, but he would come home with these like crazy names to name the kids. So like my mom was almost Cleopatra, like a white woman named Cleopatra.
Oh.
Didn't happen. That's not her name, but could have been. One odd name or unique name did sneak in because he was born on the philosopher's birthday. So I have an uncle whose name is Socrates Krusenstein.
Whoa.
And then Uncle Sock, shorten it, Uncle Sock.
Uh-huh.
And then back to like the bison and the buffalo farm. My cousin actually recently reminded me of this, Sock's daughter. And she was like, do you remember when you had that buffalo that was born on his birthday and you named him Socrates? And then you sent us some bison burger like a couple years later and you said it was Sock that we were eating like buffalo. I know. Oh my gosh. Anyways, random
don't
weird
personify
stories.
Your food, people.
We started, yeah.
Just kidding.
Oh, all right. Welcome back. This
Welcome
big
back.
Conversation about self-esteem, self-worth, and it's just so integrated into so many things. So there's like very easy to go into different topics, which is what makes it fun.
Yeah. Actually, we were going to start by reading the
yes.
Wolf Parable.
Okay. And this is one you had been familiar with it. I think a lot of people are. I love to revisit it. So
yeah.
I'm going to just read straight from it so that I don't mess it up. This is the Two Wolves Cherokee Parable. This grandfather explains to his grandson that there are two wolves fighting within him. which is an image that serves as a metaphor for a man's inner sense of conflict. The conversation between the two men goes like this. "I have a fight going on in me," the old man said. "It takes place between two wolves. One is evil. He's angry, envious, sorrowful, regretful. He has greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego." The grandfather looked at the grandson and went on. "The other embodies positive emotions. He is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, and compassion. Both wolves are fighting to the death. The same fight is going on inside you and every other person too." The grandson took a moment to reflect on this. At last, he looked up at his grandfather and asked, "Which wolf will win?" The old Cherokee gave a simple reply, "The one you feed."
Mm.
So this, I think, really brings us back to when we need to have that awareness, to be curious, mm-hmm. and to check in with which wolf we want to feed.
Yeah. Well, and like, I feel like that goes into, I can relate that to my own personal story, what I mentioned earlier about like my impulses were dominating at that one point because I had been feeding them. And so, and I think I use the analogy that when I distanced myself and really overcame my impulses, they started starving to death. Because yeah, like everything is a progressive like growth. You can like the book, have you read The Slight Edge by Greg Olson? Really good book. But he says at any point you're either on the downward trajectory or upward trajectory. And it depends on your little decisions, because if you constantly feed the bad stuff, you're on the downward slope and it's becoming stronger and stronger and stronger, which then you find yourself in this place that you have to like fight to overcome to go the opposite direction. Yeah, it just because you fed it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think feeling burnt out and that like combination of people pleasing your way through life then amplifies the need to indulge and then to feel stuck. If those are kind of the confines that you've created to live your life, you either have to people please your way through till you're burnt out and you are like engaging in these indulgences and escapes. And then what option do you have? And there's kind of that space for anxiety and depression or hopelessness to really flourish, or resentment, versus really having that awareness and realizing you can challenge that people pleasing thought.
Yeah.
I was listening to a Jay Shetty this morning. Do you listen to any Jay Shetty? Do you know who that is?
I've heard the name.
Okay. He's like this. He was a monk and then he like left and has a podcast, and he's a really attractive Indian man with like pretty green eyes. It's nice to look at. Anyways, Jay Shetty, he reflected on how this idea of the two wolves, he would really try to like keep score and would personally reflect on which wolf he would feed and be careful about. Also didn't want to convince himself. He tried to be aware of convincing himself to feed a particular wolf and like convincing himself that it would make him feel better. Like the ego is going to want to play some tricks like, well, this is why that would be better, though, even though it's really still coming from a place of ego. I hope that makes sense. But we have to have that awareness and keep it in check, because it makes it harder to grow and cultivate that self-love and love for others. In the same way, like, if we continue that pattern, like you were saying, it just gets stronger of indulging.
Yeah.
So it's that relationship and that relationship with self, responsibility with self, reputation with yourself. That's part of the self-esteem journey that you build. So an important thing when we reflect on this parable of the two wolves too, is that it's impossible to starve either one to death. You can't starve either wolf to death. And I've actually, this is kind of a recent thought I've had. I've really liked playing around with it. I'm finding a lot of value in the bad wolf.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I know, that's so strange. Okay, I'm finding like an appreciation for the bad wolf.
Okay, now tell us more.
Okay. Well, I realized that because I think for a long time, again, in that black and white thinking that we can all get stuck in, it was like, I want to crush self-doubt. I want to feel really confident and good about myself. Yet for me, one of the values that I really appreciate is my ability to be curious and have humility and to be able to check myself and like think about, okay, I'm going to hear that out. Do I need to own something? I like that about myself.
Yeah.
That piece, maybe I need to rename it, not self-doubt, but that is the best word I can think of. That allows me to do it. There is a sprinkling of that is necessary in order for me to question myself.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I can have an appreciation for it now. That doesn't mean that I want to rely on that wolf or feed that wolf in a very calculated way then.
Yeah.
Because if I were to just let it flourish, that could easily turn into like, I'm shrinking away. My self-esteem is being drained. But I think there is a balance and a purpose for it.
Yeah. Well, no, that's a great point. Because like, I remember I made the comment a few months ago on Facebook about how I'm thankful for my pain.
Yeah.
Because it's taught me so many things, you know, like I don't enjoy it.
No.
But I'm thankful have gone through it. So then, yeah, like in the contrast, like the bad wolf gave us Little Red Riding Hood, but sorry. the bad wolf really contrasts, makes you more thankful when you can overcome it. But yeah, I love that idea of that the bad wolf can never be starved, because I feel like when we set goals in our lives, we become way too overly ambitious and unrealistic. And so you think that if you just work as hard as you throw everything you can into this one goal, that all those things, that all that baggage from your life is just going to die. But no, it's not. You see people. Okay, I heard about this guy who he got caught cheating on his wife, and he one day starts going through this whole regimen of like outworking that shame and just to show everyone how sincere he was. And so for about 2 years, 2 or 3 years, he was very consistent with being a good boy, you know? And I think that he probably would have looked at the two wolf parable and thought that he had starved the bad wolf to death, that it was gone. But 3 years later, he is in another affair. Now his marriage is over. And that's not my story, by the way. This is somebody else. But yeah, so I think it's really important to have that respect for the bad wolf and know that it's always gonna be there. But yeah, but you can make it really like weak and decrepit. But yeah, at the same time, that's a very valid, that's a really good point to just to show it respect.
Yeah. And even, I mean, infidelity, we're going to go have a whole topic on that coming up, but there can be so many entanglements with the ideas of morality on that. But if we were to take one where someone was just simply, they were so afraid. They were feeding I wish I wanted to come up with a better one than good, bad, like evil. Like, I don't like the dichotomy there, but I can't think of a better explanation. So if someone were feeding the bad wolf out of that fear of just simply living, like so fearful that they weren't really challenging themselves or getting out of their comfort zone, doing things they even enjoy. Someone who's depressed, I think that is doing a disservice to them, to the world, because we're unable to see their gifts, to experience them.
Yeah.
It's not a moral issue necessarily, like we would view it with infidelity, but it is still something that is damaging.
Yeah. 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 Or you're like suppressing like your full potential or something, right?
Yeah. And it's poppycock. I say it again. Say it again. I said it before I say it again.
That's future merch.
I just like bringing old phrases back. I think it's really funny. I think it's funny. It's my like old ladiness coming out. Or like sometimes I think it'd be fun to just be like, ah, Zeus's beard, like instead of and like an expletive. Like ah.
That's really ancient.
I just think it's so
We also
weird.
Accidentally reawakened umami, which is, apparently is a really old thing, but sorry, there's this like gash in this table that I want to continue
refrain. Do I need to remove the pen?
No, yes, no. It's like a nice little stress toy. Anyway, what are we talking about?
We're talking about the two wolves. Oh, yeah. And I've been referencing some of the books that kind of kicked off this journey of self-discovery for me when I was younger. And another quote really, I think, complements the idea of the two wolves. This was the book Left to Tell by Immaculée Ilibagiza. So she was in the Rwandan genocide. Yeah. For some reason, I was into really dark books. I like the perseverance of the human spirit. So she said, I was living proof of the power of prayer and positive thinking, which really are almost the same thing. God is the source of all positive energy, and prayer is the best way to tap into his power. Mm. I think that that is overarching for people who have different belief systems, because it's kind of bringing it back to that parable. That again, like, just think of the history that went into that parable. This is a part of being human.
Yeah.
This is not unique to you. And this other, you know, these other people, they're all saying it in different ways, in different interpretations of, if you have the choice and you have the awareness, feed the good wolf.
Yeah. Okay, so I know a tiny bit about the Rwandan genocide, but I know a little. And one thing that I've noticed that I feel like ties into self-esteem is that in order for the people who were committing the genocide, in order for them to justify the killings, they had to dehumanize the people they were killing. And the crazy thing is that when we sell ourselves short, we're dehumanizing ourselves, and which is almost like we're killing ourselves in a way. We're killing the true version of ourselves. And then like how she, in that book you referenced, she mentions God, and like I have the same worldview. So I know like in the Bible it says that we are fearfully and wonderfully made, and whatever your worldview is. Like once you arrive on objective reality, it's true on every worldview that, like, if you know your self-worth, you know you are fearfully and wonderfully made, and if you believe anything less than that, then you're dehumanizing yourself, and I feel like if you can just camp there, if you can build your life on that foundation, that objective truth of who you are, that you are one in infinity. Then, like, just start there.
Yeah.
And live there, you know?
And there's a multitude of reasons why that's hard for people to get to that point, right? This is like the gold little nugget that is so fun to play around with in these conversations. But when there's trauma packed onto trauma, you get farther and farther away from the ease of finding that truth, I think. And each person is different too, I would say. It's not just that, but like just temperament, personality, the thing, like nature versus nurture, both are true. Like what is intrinsically a part of who you are versus the experiences that shaped and formed you.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be harder to find that if the only messages in these prime areas of development when you were growing up may have been that you aren't worthy, that you're not important, that you're not valuable, then how would you, if you've never experienced someone treating you that way, and how do you know how to do that for yourself?
Yeah.
If you've never felt that.
Well, a part of feeding the bad wolf is escaping reality. I don't know if that makes sense, but in my mind it does. So, and like when you have trauma and pain, a lot of times your first instinct is to try to escape, because reality is a really hard place to live for a lot of people. And so escaping reality can be very comforting. But if you really know, like, that the reality is that you are precious, you are beautiful, you are wonderful. If you really hang on to that part of reality, then you know, maybe you're less likely to be tempted to escape it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, because that is reality.
Well, and that's, I mean, isn't that That's like the point of us being here, right? Yeah. That delightfully dysfunctional, like it's that healing process of mm-hmm. of accepting those things and having that humility and yeah. working through it and being curious. It all ties in really lovely. Yeah.
Well, it's
funny.
It's almost like a positive radical acceptance where,
yeah.
cause like if you don't believe that you're like wonderful and beautiful and amazing, all that stuff, mm-hmm. but then it takes a lot of radical acceptance for you to believe that. Well, then that's almost like a fun radical acceptance.
I'm delightfully embracing myself yeah. and going to explore how I can be a better human for myself and others.
Exactly.
And evolve, and that we can call it dysfunctional, but it's part of being human if we're really choosing to learn the lessons, mm-hmm. if we want to keep learning.
Well, I mean, how many times have you had like a client, I don't know if you have or not, but how many times have you had somebody who's just like in the pit of depression? And you kind of have, you say something along the lines of, if you only knew how amazing you were, or something like that. Do you ever say that?
Yeah, but I have to say it at the right time.
Yeah.
Because that's not going to mean crap the first time I meet someone.
Yeah, true.
They don't know me. There's phases in how you develop that relationship. It's definitely the strength in that therapeutic relationship, mm-hmm. though, that like makes all those other pieces possible. So yeah, there's honestly I'm probably an odd therapist in this way, but I can get emotional in my sessions. It has not been any easier after I've had a child, because I swear I watch a Disney movie and it's bad. I'm like, oh my God, it's beautiful. But I will just say it is just my love and care for you leaking out of my eyes. Like you're just such a beautiful human.
Yeah.
And I just want you to see that, and I want to be your cheerleader, and you're doing the work. You're
yeah.
just taking the steps. And like, those are really like lovely moments to get to just be in the presence of someone and truly share my care for them in such yeah. a genuine way. So that's how I try to show those moments.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Well, and cause like in my own struggle with depression, that's what really was helpful to me, that I had to tell myself all of that.
Mm.
You know, I think I shared a couple episodes ago where I said, I finally came to the conclusion where I was like, I'm effing amazing. And if you disagree, then F you. And and because like I said, that is reality. You have to believe that. You have to believe in yourself, you know, because a lot of times a lot of people won't believe in you. So if you agree with them, then you're just going to be like stuck as...
You're letting other people define
yeah,
you then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When
and
they're wrong.
Not yeah. a way to feel joy. Mm-hmm. It's not a way to feel... That's not a way to embrace your gift or to feel happy or to get to shine your authenticity for others.
Yeah.
And part of what... When you had even spoken about it before in the previous episode, I meant to mention this and kind of tie it back. But, you know, so Viktor Frankl, he was in the Holocaust, and he really took that time to observe human behavior and pay attention to his own. And he said, everything can be taken from man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. And when you mentioned like the belief system you chose in that moment, I feel like you were following in that step. Obviously, you didn't go through the Holocaust.
No.
So I'm not wanting to water down that horrific experience, but that it is a common human experience to get to that point and have to realize what your option is.
Yeah.
One's attitude could also be maybe reframed into a thought too. I think attitude and thought can sometimes be interchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk more too about internal family systems, which is okay. not one that we've touched on yet. But again,
you know what's funny?
Yeah.
We were talking about IFS.
Yes.
I had no idea what that stood for.
I know.
So I'm
was
glad you said that.
IFS,
like, oh, that's what it must mean.
Is internal family systems okay. theory. Yeah. And this was developed by Richard Schwartz. So I'm going to try my best to explain it. I will say that this is an area I'm just starting to really enjoy diving into and learning about. I'm not an expert in IFS. I'm enrolled in a course right now I'm really excited about. So
yeah,
IFS divides people, like our personalities, I guess, our internal selves, into four different categories. So let's go over them. The
okay.
first one is self. This was so powerful for me when I understood this. Self, that's our true essence. That is when we feel calm, connected, compassion, we have creativity and clarity and courage and confidence.
So much alliteration. All of those
C words. When we have those qualities and we feel that, I hope everyone can kind of almost like, I hope there's a buzzing in you right now and you're thinking about, God, I've experienced that and this was that moment, or I can remember that. It felt so good. And I think I explain it to a lot of people. It's that true self that you're always trying to come back to. You're like, where did it go? Remember that time when I felt that and it was so good? How do I recreate that?
Yeah, when you, those moments when you're like, I don't feel like me in this, or like, I wish I could go back to my, myself.
Yeah, I felt so alive then. And like, how do I get back to that feeling? That's how I would say, that's when we're really fully embodying ourselves, and everyone can resonate with
that. Can you say all the C's again, please? Okay.
Calm, connection, compassion, creativity, clarity, curiosity, confidence, and courage. Those are the 8 C's of self in IFS.
Yeah.
When I realize that, and that is what I'm always trying, I see and I cultivate that with my clients. I love getting to champion that for them. And so in the same way of reflecting onto like a child or someone you care about, and then why can't I have that? I had to realize if I see that beauty in the people that I work with and the amazing humans I have the honor to hear their stories, I deserve to know that. Like, that's to me, it was, this is your birthright to discover and find that place, versus this is a fleeting feeling that comes and goes, or that I'm not really sure how to create. It felt different when I realized that.
It's like where your home is, where you come back to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other players in IFS are called managers, firefighters, and exiles.
Okay.
Exiles. Exiles are what hold our painful emotions, and they have been isolated from our consciousness. It's our subconscious. So we can think about the things that have unconsciously ruled us. They try to protect us. They want to be cared for, but they can leave the person feeling exposed and vulnerable. Protectors fear that this will destabilize their system. So exiles are where feelings of shame, inadequacy, feeling fear, anxiety, dependency, anger, that's where that is coming from. Okay. So if someone grew up in, I thought of an example. If someone grew up in a country that's under conflict and there's a lot of bombs going off, then their exile is going to be very, no one wants that exposed.
Yeah.
So if that means that during fireworks time of 4th of July or something, that brings an added risk to the exile coming out. And if this person hears a firework, they're completely brought back to this state of fight, flight, freeze. And I'm inadequate. And what do I do? I'm fearful. Oh my gosh, I feel weak. And it brings them to that state. We want nothing more. That's very vulnerable and scary. Yeah. We don't want to experience that. We will go to great lengths to not experience that and to feel or look weak. So how we do that is through our managers and our firefighters. The managers are trying to protect us and be proactive from it ever happening. So the manager in this situation might say, great, there's going to be fireworks. We're going to make sure that we book a cabin in the woods where there's no one around and we'll just hide out. We're going to be really control the situation. This person might also be more critical, or a planner, a judge, a caretaker. This is where maybe the overachiever perfectionist comes in. So we can all kind of click in into understanding when we've been a manager, and it can be helpful. There's also people, and I have to check myself. My husband is really good at helping me in a very gentle way when I'm maybe being too critical about the situation. You have to dial it in so much to avoid the whatever it is, and I could actually be more relaxed. Does the manager and the exile, are those connecting with you at all? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, well, I'm learning this right now. So I guess the way that I've connected the dots with exile is like all the feelings that make you want to exile, you know? And so then, and manager, yeah, that's pretty easy to wrap my mind around.
So the firefighter also wants to protect, but it's not proactive like the manager.
It's more responsive.
Yes. Okay, yeah. So that's going to look like springing into action. And that's going to look like oh my gosh, I didn't plan that thing. Now the fireworks are going off. I have to numb. Give me that bottle of whiskey.
Yeah. So it's like
numbing, self-soothing.
Yeah, and but the fire's already there.
The fire's there.
Yeah.
The fire has been lit. The exile has been set off.
Mm-hmm.
We are in fight, flight, freeze. This is being, it's currently happening, and we're just directly trying to disassociate,
yeah,
break free. This is also where it's in the firefighter where those quick second decisions that for someone to end their life come up.
Yeah.
They're just thinking, great, this is too painful. There's a way out. And it's a lifelong decision made in this temporary moment of being flooded and sparked. Although obviously like there's major depression, there's a lot of reasons that contribute to this, but I'm saying in that moment, in terms of IFS, that's where a lot of the thinking is coming from.
Where it's just like so unbearable. Yeah.
So that's my mini lesson,
crash course on
internal family systems. But it's fun to be able to talk then about like, well, in this area of your life, person I'm working with,
mm-hmm,
was that the firefighter or the manager who was operating?
Yeah.
Was that the self? How do we let the self, like, how do we welcome them into this space?
Yeah. And it's really good to name it and identify it. And because like it from exile and firefighter, those in my mind remind me of post-traumatic stress. I don't know if that's accurate.
Well, I mean, I used an example that was very PTSD relatable.
Okay.
But we could also say infidelity, for example,
mm-hmm,
where if someone is feeling feelings of inadequacy and that exile is triggered, then they want to immediately self-soothe with the firefighter and disassociate with some other relationship or with something that's distracting.
Yeah.
Usually not in a positive or healthy way, typically, you know, different addictions, diet, sex, oversleeping, overworking, self-harm. Yeah.
So then I guess the healthy way to navigate, like manager obviously is where you want to be, right?
Not necessarily, because again, that's where the people pleaser can be. I think we want to be in self. How do we navigate coming back to self?
Okay.
How do we come back to this place of calm and connection and compassion where I'm not being ruled by my exile?
That's right. It's because it's like you need to feel and experience what like that objective place that you can return to, because then if you know that you're off of that place, it's almost like a compass where like if you're feeling triggers and you're feeling really doing uncharacteristic things that are not serving self truly, then it's like, okay, well that is now, these are symptoms that you're not being yourself, right?
It's another way to conceptualize and kind of check in with yourself for self-awareness.
Yeah.
Like, I'm feeling overwhelmed. Is it my manager or my firefighter operating?
Yeah.
What am I afraid of? What just got triggered? What sensitive thing just like sparked this?
Yeah.
Mm. What kind or balancing message could I tell myself?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a combination of these things that can give us this calm. And then, but the calm has to also come from, like we've spoken about in a previous episode, like actual things you're doing to help your physiological body.
Yeah.
Like go be less reactive.
Yeah.
And find a place to be more responsive, which means deep breathing is the easiest one. Those belly breaths.
Mm-hmm.
I love progressive muscle relaxation too. That's something that maybe would be able to provide in some bonus content, but like how do we teach ourselves and our body the way to do this? I think that's kind of the easiest way in this mini lesson of how we can benefit from that.
Yeah.
So when we think about the word exile, it means someone who is feeling unsafe. They've been like banished from their country.
Mm.
They don't have a sense of security or groundedness. So if we kind of picture that, it makes a lot of sense in why we would have vulnerability and fear around it. There's no sense of just okayness.
Yeah.
it's not at all. And so it's really based on our past history and the messaging that we got from childhood oftentimes. So it's like, by no means, we want to lock it up. I do not want to feel that. I do not want to be reminded and have to face the feelings of worthlessness or shame or fear. So at any cost, And that's where these managers and firefighters can be developed to the point of being not of service to us.
Mm.
You mentioned, just kind of gravitating towards where praise is.
Yeah.
That was a way to manage probably a lot of feelings from the exile. Like, okay, I'm going to proactively go towards these areas or these people where I will be more buffered to experience criticism.
Yeah.
I'm making this up because I don't actually know your real world internally completely, but this is an example I'm riffing off of, you know. So then that would then be like, I don't want to feel that internal feeling of I'm not worthy enough. We would easily be able to fall into that people-pleasing behavior without realizing it and being very unconscious. And that can fuel us for a long time. Again, if we're like a car, it can provide adequate fuel for a certain amount of time before it's not operating as well. And I think that you came to that point a few years ago when you realized, this isn't scratching that itch the same way it used to.
Yeah. Yeah. I was living for others. Yeah. I mean, I have so many thoughts, but I'm trying to like figure out where to land. But the whole exile, I love that illustration because like in my mind, I keep thinking of self as home. Like that is just, I don't know if that's accurate or not.
I love that. Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like there, you know, to build a home, there's a foundation and that doesn't move. That's attached to the earth. And then if you have a really good foundation, you build a house on top of it and it's not going to crumble because it's on such a solid foundation. And so, and it's objective and you can, you could set your compass to it. And so like, and I like the idea of just always like pointing to that. And even though you're going to stray inevitably, then, you know, coming back to it. But then the thing, the where I struggled in my own life was not knowing who I was. And so then like my question, I guess, is how can someone listening and me too, how can we figure out who we are?
How can we figure out who we are?
Because I mean,
it's such an existential question. And I love that. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about the values exercise and I think that that's a really good step one.
But I mean,
is identifying what the values are. But keep going, because I have another layer and I want to understand your question more. Okay. Tell me more.
Well, because like my caution for myself is that I know that I'd be tempted to gravitate toward the things that make me feel good. And I don't know if that's good or not.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then I know that the proper way to do it is to go toward self and home. But again, the question is,
what's
the
math to get there? Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, that was great. I think some things that can help us on that path is the values exercise, but also when it comes to self-care, what is indulgent versus restorative? We've talked about that when we went over imposter syndrome, but that's a really good piece of this too. And I think it takes like really sitting down and listing things out for yourself, because that creates your own personal blueprint and it can only come from you, that kind of self-awareness. I can't make up for James what are your indulgent and restorative activities. You know what feels restorative. I don't. That's an internal feeling. And for some people, I'm not saying like video games or some of the things that I kind of like automatically put into an indulgent category. They're not always that case, but I would say that they probably require a time limit then.
Yeah.
Because those are all things that we can get easily sucked into for too long and it's no longer indulgent. It's no longer restorative. Excuse me. It's now turned into indulgent.
Yeah. Like so, when you win a battle royale in Fortnite, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, like when you're playing poker with your friends and you just like keep, we weren't even playing for money. When I played poker last night, I stayed up too late, but I did win. They call me the Dragon Lady, and there's a reason why.
Zach told us what he calls you.
Oh, no.
See, I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh. Now I'm going to just blush this whole time. Terrible. Terrible.
So, okay. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Shifting back to the serious here.
Yes.
Okay. The C's, that whatever that list was, all the C words.
I know, the C words. I love those 8 C's. And I come back to them because I think that we can learn a lot by just sitting with that in remembering, when did I feel those things? How do I get back to cultivating that, living that?
Yeah, and that would be like, that would almost be like a really helpful guide. Should we play a game?
Oh,
should we try to like name the things that connect with the with each C real quick?
The things that can, what I want to know maybe more personally too is, when are moments when you felt truest to yourself? What like resonates with you of feeling calm, connected, compassionate, creative, having clarity, curiosity, confidence, and courage?
Okay. For me, when I get to be like artistic and like create things, but then also like being around with my kids, my family, being in nature. Geez, I'm saying a lot. Yeah, those are just some of the first things that come to mind.
Yeah, that's really good. That's fun.
When, what about you?
Yeah, when I think about it, I think about nature as well. I think about learning. And like learning with the intent of how we're all connected as humans. That's, I guess, the lens that I see a lot of things through. I think about, like quality family time. And, you know, you can't help but be curious and creative when you're with tiny humans.
Yeah.
I think about just connection with others, which is, I guess, why I'm in the field I'm in, whether that means doing this or public speaking or individual therapy. Just like, it feels good to be like, God, are you a human with me? Do you feel that too? Isn't that good? Feels so good to like say that that's an experience we've both had. We're connected in that. So those are the ways that really rings true. And I think that's a really good first step, just what we did in identifying and helping people know, who am I? If that's where you feel those things, lean into all of that then.
Yeah. And then also, like, I guess that might be a good way to set personal boundaries for people, like the people that are trying to like pull you away from those things that make you feel alive and self.
And when I've said things like, I don't know that that's where I want my energy to go towards, or that's not where I want to spend my energy, that's, I guess, the question that I started asking myself when I was wanting to have healthier boundaries. And it was in, I don't know that I knew IFS at the time that I was really starting to have healthy boundaries, but I think that this would have been helpful of like, well, does it help me get to this place of self, this description? And that's maybe a good way to answer that question.
Yeah.
For anyone who's trying to have healthy boundaries too, and like if someone is going to say, hey, do you want to do this thing? You'd be really great at it.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to want to be like, totally, yeah.
I can shine, yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. I think it's so important because I'm someone who's passionate about a lot of ideas, and I got that from my mother. I'm so grateful. She was always like, I can do that. But I also saw her take on way too much and the cost that it played for her and for the family. So I think it's really important to just say, let me think about that. Let me gauge what I have time or energy for and just, oh, that's a great idea. Let's come back to it.
Yeah.
I'm curious about it, but let me think. And I think that just those simple phrases give you a buffer to assess, is this something that is going to help me cultivate that sense of self?
Yeah.
Or is this something that's going to detract and drain from it? And you don't have to feel bad. You really don't.
You know what's funny is that we hear this term, self-respect, thrown around. But now that we're defining it, it makes a lot of sense. Because like I used to volunteer at my old church, and I remember reaching a point of burnout where, but it was all things that I felt like, these are like, I'm serving people, I'm really helping people. But then I was just like, but I don't really have, I was doing it, sacrificing time with my wife and kids. And then also I looked at it, didn't have much, any self-respect. I wasn't respecting self. Mm. And that's a really good way to use it as like a buffer. Is that the right word?
I think like a barometer, like a buffer and a barometer. It gives you a buffer to say, let me think about that. A bufferometer. Yes.
Coming up with all these words. Another t-shirt.
Like gives you that pause to assess. And also, if we're tying it back to this idea of how we're defining self, yeah, it gives you a barometer of like, you know, that helps me lean in 7.5%, but I don't have the energy for that. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, we're going to come out with this thing called the bufferometer. It's going to be Kehlani's voice just like that.
people, calculating. Aligned with self, 99%, proceed. That's how it's going to sound. It's going to be so cute.
I hope you guys all have that voice in your head for the rest of your life.
Yeah, we're gonna revisit the bufferometer.
Bufferometer, yeah. Yeah. So I think that it's like a learning self-respect and really naming it and defining it is is important.
Another, like, we've talked about that inner critic, and that can be what fuels the manager and the firefighter to do. I mean, I'm listing the behaviors that you might see if you're stuck in the manager or the firefighter, but there's that inner critic that's really fueling some of that tied anyways, in the exile, blah, blah, blah. That, I think it's fun sometimes, I do this with kids and teens especially, to name it. Mm-hmm. And then in your head, you know, that picture of like the angel and the demon, in your head you can really strengthen that other voice. But if you can name it, it's now not you telling yourself, like, people think I had that thought, so it must be true. Now we're depersonalizing it a little bit, and it's this other thing outside of us.
Yeah.
And it's easier to make sense of it and battle it out, kind of like the wolves, yeah. I guess. So, like, for me, I'm always like, oh man, I name mine. Oh, what is that? Do you watch Harry Potter?
No.
Oh my gosh. Honey, what is Dolores? Dolores Umbridge. Those who like Harry Potter will know who I mean when I say Dolores Umbridge. She's horrible. She's terrible. And that's who I name my inner critic. So if I start noticing them come up, it can be add some humor and levity too, but I'll just be like, Dolores, not today. No, not today. And I find it's so fun for people to like come up with that name and to create that dialogue with them, or even to do a writing exercise of like, what do you want to say to Dolores? Has been so mean. What would you say? What would this other side of you want to, that side self, say to Dolores? And I like coming up with really odd names. Like,
can I call mine Dolores?
Gertrude. I don't. Do you want to be? Yeah. I mean, if that resonates with you, but if you got Bartholomew.
Oh yeah.
What else do we have? Gustav. I don't know.
These are weird names.
I love weird names. They're so.
I'm gonna call mine
Umami.
But it
makes it funnier. Umami, no, no.
You know what's funny is that you're talking about the devil and the angel on your shoulder. I actually have a devil on my shoulder tattoo.
Really?
See?
Oh, I didn't know that. That's actually really funny.
It was supposed to be a samurai mask we got a little carried away with.
It got carried.
But I never went back at the angel.
What's up with that? Because my dad also has a samurai like tattoo guy on his back of his shoulder, actually.
Are we we probably belong to the same gang.
The same gang? The same Asian gang?
Yeah.
Isn't samurai a Japanese thing?
Yeah.
You're like, whatever.
Well, I'm actually 1/8 Japanese.
Whoa.
My great grandpa was Japanese. And my family.
Oh, that's interesting.
My family name is Takahashi. Takashi.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Wow.
My mom told me she's Korean. So when she told me, she was ashamed.
But I told you when I did the 23andMe, at first it said I was like 2% Korean, and I told my dad, and he was like, no, no, no.
It's like, it's cool, though. Like,
I know. It was only because like we were always told we were like, that he was full Japanese. So I think it was a surprise. Anyways, it updated it updates when you... more people signed up, and now it says for 100% Japanese. All is right in the world, or he is.
Oh.
Both of my dad's brothers are in arranged marriages with Korean women. One of them has passed away. So all of my cousins on that side of the family are Japanese and Korean.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Like me, I'm Japanese and Korean. And I think my last name is Welsh or Irish or something like that. So whatever.
We're little mishmashes.
Yeah.
So I gave that visual of the angel and the demon because it's a really common thing. We all grew up with cartoons and like Bugs Bunny and stuff. Like, I feel like it was always like popping up and things like that. Yeah. Uh-huh. And you showed us the tattoo too, but I don't mean to say that we can't eliminate the devil or that side of us. It's more about how do we find that balance, because it's really there to keep us safe. It honestly, like, it's there as a means to try and keep us safe, but it's overzealous in its attempt. One example I give is at the mall, which is a fun place to go for a lot of people. I can't stop with the cinema. It's so good. But there's also theft that happens. And so there's mall cops there. And if the mall cop were to say, theft happens, that's bad, I don't like it, and they just lock up the whole mall and stand outside and say, nope, can't come in here. Mm-hmm. That's like we're overcorrecting. And that's the same idea as where the manager can overcorrect to the point that, like, this isn't flowing. This isn't functional anymore. So we have to find this balance between, like, how we are going to react and respond to that dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in my own personal experience, when I had, like, my moral failure, if you want to call it that. I noticed that people responded in different ways, like where they wanted to overcorrect and, like, punish and things based on their experience from it, like their
how it hit them. Yeah. I'm sure for a lot of people, stories of infidelity can really, you know, well, my mom was cheated on, and so that's horrible, or I was cheated on, and like it can spark that transference, would be the word, of like, you know, I'm personally affected outside of you and your story.
Yeah. So that's what I can add to that.
What was that experience like for you? Because that's hard. You are known in our community, but also just you're being really open, honest about that. You say personal failure. I don't know why I struggle with that, even though I understand why you're saying it. It's like your compass was on the fritz. You know, your compass was like, where's my north?
You know what's crazy is that, like, I would always, when I was in the middle of it, I would always have this like image in my mind where I was being pulled between two planets. And now looking back in this conversation, I'm realizing that that one of the planets was home, and then the other planet was escape, you know, where, and so, I remember like feeling like an astronaut between these two gravitational pulls. And then I knew that if I went to home planet, then at the time, Bad Wolf had been so well fed that I was being pulled to the alien planet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was on alien planet, well, now I like had all this guilt that I was like missing out on home planet. Mm. And so I don't know if that resonates or makes much sense, but that was kind of that was like one visual I had that really kind of helped and then made me like really fight against alien planet.
And I like that description. I wonder if a good question in that back and forth, if people are feeling similarly about whatever thing they might, hardship they might be going through, is, well, then what's missing? Because then what aspects are missing? Because for infidelity, which again is going to be a whole different episode, a lot of times it's just people feel like this experience with someone else or this connection with someone else is reminding me of a part of myself that I've forgotten. And it feels nice to be seen that way or to be like interact that way. And it has to do with a longing to be seen, not necessarily to leave a relationship all the time.
Well, I feel like it was almost like a perverted way to feed something that was true to myself. You know, so like I know that it was wrong, but it's still the fact remains that part of me was still not being served. There were definitely healthier ways that I could have been true to that part of myself, but unfortunately I had never identified that really. it was just like a vulnerability that I didn't know I had until like, you know, that all happened. But yeah, but then that also kind of goes into like, well, then it's really important to have self-awareness and to do like, take inventory and really examine yourself. Where am I vulnerable? Where have I not been true to myself? Cause like even now I feel a lot more peace, but I know that I have vulnerabilities. So then where have I not been true to myself today? And that's something that I need to sit with. Yeah. Well, I guess, we can just kind of leave that cliffhanger there. I feel like we kind of like tapped into something really juicy, but
I know. Woo. So there are, okay, so we're going to wrap it up, but I wanted to make sure to also sprinkle in a couple, quotes again. I just think it's nice to have a quote that we can riff off of. And I think it's fun, especially when I think about the time period that some of these quotes were made. It just really highlights again, like, this is part of being human. That experience hasn't changed. So I misquoted this. This was actually Jung, and he said the most terrifying thing is to accept oneself completely. Look at all of the ways that we turn to the firefighter or the manager to avoid accepting oneself, or that we push away vulnerability. I think that's an interesting one. Yeah. And then this one truly is Aristotle, because I had misquoted Jung before as Aristotle, but it's everything, again, encapsulates what we've been talking about. Happiness does not consist in pastimes and amusements, but in virtuous activities.
Mm.
Virtuous activities, that's esteemable acts. That's about connecting with your values. It's about what's personally important to you.
Yeah.
And that's what needs to be discovered. Not what you're told to do, not what you're people pleased to do, not what you're shamed to do. What values, what do you want in your life? What do you want to invite and cultivate in your life? And what esteemable actions and activities can we lean into and be curious about?
I love it. I have an Aristotle quote too. I believe it was, hey, 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 smoke weed every day. So on that.
And that was from Micro Machine Ethics,
right? That was from Micro Machine Ethics.
Yeah. Okay, next time, I'm so excited. We're going to be talking more about relationships again.
Ooh.
And I'm really excited too, because coming up just right around the corner, I will be able to provide a marriage seminar. It is actually for all relationships. I shouldn't say it's just marriages. I think this would be great for premarital couples or people in just long-term relationships wanting a tune-up. It's going to be based on Gottman's 7 principles of making marriage work. That'll be coming up. So I'm really excited to sprinkle in some of that and to give more information on how we can become more curious and dive deeper.
Should we campaign to see if the Gottmans will come to that?
I feel like that's highly unlikely, but we could try.
If you're watching, Gottmans, you guys lived only 3 hours away from here, so.
I don't want them to watch me do it. Don't come. Actually, I take it back.
No.
Don't come.
Yes.
Come.
Or maybe they can just be guests.
Yeah. No, just, yeah, and speak. Oh my gosh, that would be amazing. We'd have them on the show.
God, bow down. I don't know. I'd be such a fangirl.
Oh yeah, well, me too.
A year long series.
We would just be like, okay, so just talk to us. Tell us some things. Have you heard this Aristotle quote? Okay, on that note, we love you. We're thankful for you. We're so glad you guys are along this journey with us. And I'm thankful for you, Kehlani.
Oh, I'm thankful for you.
And yeah.
Thanks for being curious.
Yeah, same. Okay.
All right, see you next time.